are tuned in to Lightly on the Ground Radio on WRIRLP 97.3 and worldwide at WRIR.org. We're exploring our food system, which the Food and Nutrition Information Center of the USDA's National Agricultural Library describes as everything from farm to table. It extends from a seed in a farmer's hand to a bill in the hands of those making policy on the local, national, and worldwide front. I am Sunny Gardner, and our guests today in the live room at Richmond Independent Radio are Olga Kolotushkina and Mike Pucci. Olga is the regulatory and legislative advisor for the Roanoke River Basin Association and spokesperson for the Dan River Basin Association's Uranium Mining Task Force. And Mike is from Lake Gaston, North Carolina, downstream from where businessmen want to mine and mill uranium. He is a concerned and informed citizen who has thoroughly researched the issue and is now organizing his circle of friends, colleagues, neighbors, and other contacts in North Carolina to ensure that they are involved in decisions that will affect the fate of the basin. Olga, welcome. I'm so glad you could come today.
Well, thank you so much for having me in your studio again.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And Mike, this is the first time up here, huh?
In many years. It's good to be back in the Commonwealth.
All right. Well, Olga and I met a few months ago at the Virginia Garden Club's day-long forum on uranium mining. And we've heard the National Research Council's first report to the General Assembly and the public. And that report is entitled Uranium Mining in Virginia, Scientific, Technical, Environmental, Human Health and Safety, and Regulatory Aspects of Uranium Mining and Processing in Virginia. Have you read it?
Yes. I need more time to do a more thorough reading.
And I think our legislators need a long time to think about it, too.
Yes, it's a very long and dense report.
Yeah. Well, the short story, it's on the website, which I'm not going to tell you the whole name for, but if anyone wants to go, you can go to nas.edu. That's the National Academies of Science, nas.edu, and then just search for uranium mining, and you'll come up with the report. But the first paragraph really sums it up. A range of health and environmental issues and related risks are important considerations as Virginia deliberates on whether or not to rescind its almost 30-year moratorium on mining uranium. Although there are internationally accepted best practices to mitigate most of these risks, there are still steep hurdles to be surmounted before mining and processing could take place within a regulatory setting that appropriately protects workers, the public, and the environment. So give me a little overview of the meeting that you went to the other day where Paul Locke and the rest of the committee were there to tell about it.
The National Academy of Sciences released their report on December 19th, 2011. But under their contract with Virginia Tech, they're supposed to conduct a five-month public outreach program that is to include public briefings at different locations in the state. And I was at one of those briefings in Fairfax, Virginia, and that was the second briefing. The first one was in Danville, and yesterday was another one in Charlottesville, and today another one is held in Richmond. And those who live in Virginia Beach should expect the NAS committee to be there in mid-April. Unfortunately, the NAS staff did not give enough notice. It was a very short notice for such meeting, but it was a nice gathering nevertheless, 45 people, at least three.
And that's the Fairfax meeting.
That was Fairfax County.
And there were 75 in Charlottesville.
Great. There were three legislators present. And they were legislative aides from, I believe, from three more offices. I was very impressed with the committee's willingness to answer the public's questions. Mm-hmm. We took a lot of time.
And Mike, have you been to one of these meetings yet?
No, this will be my first one tonight here in Richmond.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what brings you here? What is your concern being down in North Carolina?
Well, I'm a resident and a user of the water downstream. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very concerned about the activities that happen upstream that may impact all of us in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. We all share the same waterway between the two states, and uranium mining in our watershed is not a good activity for the future mm-hmm. of the watershed.
Yeah, that word forever always comes to mind when you think about uranium. You know, you're talking 70,000 years or 100,000 years. That's as good as forever to be endangered.
Yeah, you know, the Blue Ridge Mountains are gorgeous, mm-hmm. beautiful country, and the site for the proposed mine is at the foothills of the Blue Ridge, And the geography works against safe mining in this region. Water, as we know, flows downhill. Mm-hmm. There's never been a uranium mine that's ever operated without a breach of their containment cells or never operated without some type of contamination in the local groundwater. And the very real probability, because we are in a hurricane zone, and not to mention 90 miles from the epicenter of a 6.1 earthquake last fall, the probability of a breach in this particular site is very real. And once that breach happens and that sediment ends up in the river, we're likely to see radiation levels higher than what's recommended for human interaction for up to 2 years following just the first contamination.
What is your background, very briefly?
My degrees are in water resource management, biology, and secondary education from the University of Wisconsin at Stevens Point. I've been a teacher and a swim coach, and I spent the majority of my life working in the pharmaceutical industry, and the last 8 years in federal government affairs work and advocacy for that company.
Okay. Because you were speaking about like someone who knew about water. That was what I was trying to get at, yeah.
Yes.
Good. The researchers weren't charged with making a recommendation, but they really did come out with a lot of very practical information, well-based in science. It was quite an array of experience and expertise on that panel that worked on this research. There were certain parameters they could not step out of. They could not do site-specific evaluations, and they couldn't recommend whether or not they would recommend mining uranium in Virginia. People kept asking, what do you think we ought to do? What do you think about all this? And they were so graceful. Paul Locke would gracefully, he would just demur and say, I would be very uncomfortable saying anything about that. And they were very consistent. They were considerate, and they did not sound supportive of the plan to mine uranium because there are so many hurdles. You could just see that they were practical people, and even though it's all science-based and they couldn't say yes or no, I sort of got the impression that asked individually, you know, in 2 years or something, that they would have an opinion. Did you see any of that in there?
What was very interesting, when I was at that meeting in Fairfax, Virginia, I explained why I'm there. And the reason I'm there is because I have two little kids. And of course, you know, being a small child, you are automatically in the risk group. Mm-hmm. And also my husband, we both grew up and were raised and grew up in the former Soviet Union. So in 1986, the year of the Chernobyl tragedy, my hometown turned out to be upwind and his hometown was downwind. And they were right on the pathway of the Chernobyl cloud fallout. And they did have a radiation exposure-related illness in the family, in a small child, 8 years old. So obviously my husband is also in the risk group. Mm-hmm. And my main concern is the health of my family. The NAS report provides a lot of information on the health impacts of the toxic elements, and also the radon and radionuclides. And my specific question, I wanted to know what are my chances and what are the chances that my children and my husband, being in the risk group, will get sick. And in the report, there is a study based in Culpeper, Virginia, by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency that estimates the risk to a person living within a 50-mile radius from the site to be 1.4 in 1,000 chances. To me, that's pretty high.
That's high.
Yes. But unfortunately, you know, I wanted to know more. But unfortunately, the report doesn't say that because that was not their task. Mm-hmm. Their task was not quantify our risk. Mm-hmm. You know, their task was to provide all the information or as much information as possible within the statement of task so that we have to decide. But unfortunately, that decision has been taken out of the hands of the people and the legislators by Governor McDonnell.
How so?
Well, he in January, he issued a directive to establish a so-called uranium working group. Mm-hmm. He directed the heads of the three agencies, executive branch agencies, Virginia Department of Health, Virginia Department of Environmental Quality, and Department of Mines, Minerals, and Energy, to form a group. And his news release stated that they're going to do a site-specific study and more evaluations. But what it turned out to be a working group that is currently developing regulations and writing statutory and administrative regulatory language in secrecy without public meetings, with a very limited opportunity for public comment, where all of the working papers, anything that the public submits, anything that the experts submit to that working group are not subject to the Freedom of Information Act, because now they're classified as the governor's working papers. And the task of that working group is to develop the statutory language, in other words, the legislative bill, that later, in the beginning of 2013, will be included in the governor's legislative package and recommended to the General Assembly.
Well, it seems like they're in a hurry to move on this. And it doesn't, I can't quite figure out what the path of figuring this out ought to be. We've got to figure out the regulations, but I don't think that should be first. We have to actually find out whether or not it's practicable and safe beyond any doubt to even open up the first shovelful.
Exactly, and this is where the people have to weigh in, because first and foremost, the citizens of Danville are in front of a train wreck that's heading their way. And further downstream, there are seven counties in North Carolina that draw all of their drinking water from the river. As it so happens, the city of Raleigh is in a perpetual drought situation because the Neuse River cannot supply the city, and there's no extra supply of water in the state of North Carolina to cover for any kind of collapse in the water supply that may result from a contamination upstream.
Well, contamination aside, I believe that uranium mining and milling would consume a lot of water.
That's correct.
So they would be drawing water off the Dan River and the Roanoke River already.
That's correct. And in the process of milling, there would be daily discharge of radioactive material that could possibly get into the groundwater, mm-hmm. and likely will. And so this is, again, a real threat to the local people in anywhere around any uranium mine, but specifically in Danville, which is downhill from the Coles Hill site.
Speaking of the water consumption, Dr. Moran from Colorado, he was in your studio November, Robert Moran, mm-hmm. and he completed a site-specific assessment based on the documentation and estimates that were released by Virginia Uranium, the company that wants to mine the site. And what he discovered, that over the lifetime of the mine, they will need 5 billion gallons of water. And that 5 billion gallons of water will end up being contaminated. It will not be consumed in the sense that it will not disappear.
That's right. He's a hydrogeologist.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you think about it, during the BP oil spill, a little bit over 200 million gallons of oil was spilled into the Gulf of Mexico. Mm-hmm. Now we have a big scandal unfolding where a Massey company produced 1.4 billion gallons of wastewater and pumped into the underground shafts. But here we're dealing with 5 billion gallons of contaminated, very toxic radioactive water. So where is it going to go?
I can't even conceive of 5 billion gallons. Is it as big as, like, Carr Lake? We don't know.
and these are
it's huge.
And these estimates are on the low side, mm-hmm. because they are provided by the company that claims that they will be recycling some of that water.
If the water is drawn from the water table through a well, it will compete with the water demand from both the city and the community in the area, and especially for agriculture use. Mm-hmm. And in dry years, you may have a lack of water in the area. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, the water that does go back into the water table will be contaminated, and there is no technology today to remove radioactive contamination from the groundwater.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. Just as an aside, I understand that we really don't have a shortage of uranium in the system right now anyway. We already have enough above ground to provide all of the uses for 50 years. So we really don't need to hurry on this. But you mentioned the company, Olga, and I'm interested in hearing about the corporate structure and where the money would come from to fund this in Virginia, and then where the money would go, you know, much like a mill. We're going to mill the money. It's going to come in, it's going to be changed and moved around, and then it's going to go out on the other side. Do either of you have an understanding of what's going on with that?
Yes. It's a very complex corporate structure. We have Virginia Uranium Incorporated.
And that's a little local company?
That's a little local company based in Chatham, Virginia. Uh-huh. And that local little company holds uranium mining leases on the land that belongs to Walter Coles and Mr. Bowen. These are two large adjacent properties, and that's where the two deposits are located. They also hold leases to some other adjacent properties that they need for their operations. The Virginia Uranium Inc., the Virginia company based in Chatham, 100% of that is owned by a private Canadian company called Virginia Uranium Holdings.
A Canadian company?
A Canadian company. Okay. All 100% of Virginia Uranium, a Chatham-based company, is owned by Virginia Uranium Holdings, a Yukon-based company in Canada. Mm-hmm. 29% of that company is owned by a publicly traded company called Virginia Energy Resources, Inc., formerly known as Santoy. And the primary business of Santoy is actually developing previously undeveloped deposits. So they are more like, they start up a project, and then they find investors or a big company that would buy it out. And that's how they make their money. So for them, the project in Virginia is just one of those speculations. You know, they're just taking a risk, mm-hmm. but they hope for a very high payoff.
So they're talking about providing jobs and income in Virginia. How do you see that? But how would it benefit Virginians?
Well, I think it's very important to do a cost-based analysis and to look at all costs and all benefits, and also do a risk evaluation. There are two socioeconomic studies that were also released in December. One was commissioned by the Danville Regional Foundation and was conducted by RTI International. It does not address the costs whatsoever.
The financial cost?
The financial costs, mm-hmm. yes, related to the environmental contamination, the stigma, the lost jobs, the lost opportunities, the business that was not recruited as a result. Another socioeconomic study by a Virginia-based consultancy, Chmara Economics and Analytics, looks at four different scenarios. And in the worst-case scenario, they estimate the cost to the community to be $6 billion.
And that's just in Pennsylvania, or...? What do they describe?
Well,
as the
that is just the public costs. So they didn't look at the cost of what's going to happen to those homeowners downstream, for example. This is just the cost of what is going to happen to the region, the cost of cleanup, the lost jobs, the health costs.
And the cost to the Commonwealth and the taxpayers of creating an entirely new regulatory agency here in Richmond. Mm-hmm. And funding that forever.
Mm-hmm. That was, you know, that's a very interesting point, forever, because what I learned at the NAS briefing in Fairfax is that there is no technology to permanently isolate and stabilize uranium mill waste. Mm-hmm. So everything is based on continuous and diligent stewardship that consequently will be funded by us and our children and their children and for generations to come.
So when the mines close and the jobs go away, Virginia will be stuck with the regulatory expenses in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm. So these are privatized profits and socialized costs.
Privatized profits and socialized costs. So that means that the entire society would be paying for the cost of somebody to make a whole lot of money.
Absolutely.
Well, to get back to the study just for a moment, one of the things that came out in the very brief was, I think, a cautionary line. I'm going to read it to you. Tell me what you think. Three overarching best practices should be guiding principles if uranium mining were to be permitted. The need to plan at the outset of the project for the complete life cycle of mining, processing, and reclamation. The need to engage and retain qualified experts familiar with internationally accepted best practices for all aspects of the project. And the need to encourage meaningful and timely public participation throughout the life cycle of the project, beginning at the earliest stages. Let's just look at that last one for a moment. Do you see that we're actually engaging the public in a meaningful way at this point?
That one is out completely, because the public has no meaningful opportunity. That is why today people are coming out on the streets and protesting. Mm-hmm. At the same venue where the National Academy of Sciences committee is going to give its briefing.
Yeah, I'm wondering if the governor is going to be there. I wonder if he's actually heard one of these briefings. He wasn't at the one that I went to.
I don't think he's interested. He's made up his mind already.
Hmm. The reason that we're protesting, I think, is to be sure that we are planning at the outset for the complete life cycle of the project.
Well, the problem is you can plan all you want, mm-hmm. but if the uranium prices fall, the company is going to withdraw. And currently, under the Nuclear Regulatory Commission regulations, and also under many state regulations in the states where uranium mining is taking place, the project operator has an opportunity to file to request a standby mode, which will allow that operator to suspend operations indefinitely without going into expense of reclamation and remediation.
And who does it then?
They continue asking for extension of that standby mode, and they wait and see. And another option, if the prices are too low, to process alternate feed. That's radioactive waste, uranium with some uranium content brought from other locations. So they stockpile. They actually get money for accepting that waste. They stockpile it, process, and then they dispose it along with the uranium mill tailings that they already have on the site. That's what White Mesa Mill is doing. That's the only operating conventional uranium mill in the country. They are processing alternate feed when they're not on the standby mode.
Well, that sounds even a little less comfortable, because we would have to be bringing all this waste in. And I get my hackles up when I see a train full of trash from up north coming down. So our time is wrapping up. Let's just take a moment and say how to find out more. Your Facebook pages, your websites, where do you go to find out more information?
We have a website, rrba.org.
And that's
this is the Roanoke River Basin Association website. Mm-hmm. I can also direct you to a website, Keep the Ban Coalition. We're part of that coalition. The address is keeptheban.org.
Okay. And both of these have Facebook pages also with yes. links to those websites.
Yes, and there is a third site of the Virginia Coalition that is a group affiliated with the Roanoke River Basin Association. Mm-hmm. It's made of businessmen and professionals. Their website is readthereports.org.
Read the reports.
Yes.
That's a good idea, and I'm hoping that all of our legislators are sitting at home reading them now. It's very exciting times, people. I want to thank Mike Pucci for coming. Any final comments?
No, it's right. nice to be here, and thank you for listening and giving your voice to this issue.
And I'm glad that you're going to the hearing tonight. Yes.
Thank you so much for having us here.
All right. Well, Lightly on the Ground Radio is a Sunny Gardner production for Richmond Independent Radio, broadcast on WRIR-LP 97.3 FM and WRIR.org. I am grateful to all the volunteers at Richmond Independent Radio, especially Ethan Scott, our engineer, and to our community of donors and underwriters who bought us all this equipment for making radio. To participate in the discussion, please email your thoughts to sunny at WRIR.org. Befriend us on Facebook by joining the Lightly on the Ground Facebook page so you will know who appears on the show and when podcasts become available. The theme music is Bonefire Dance by Rattlemouth, and I hope you'll join us again on the radio. Until then, walk in the light and live lightly on the ground. Thank you for listening, and thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.